Blog Talk Radio.
We've got film. And we've got psychology. When we put the two together, we've got filmcology. Each week, we will look at the psychology of the characters in film, and it gives us something lovely to think about. So, let's get started. Filmcology is now.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Thursday. It's May 8th, and the show we are reviewing today is White Squall. Now, this film is actually a true story. It's based on the accounts listed by one of the people in the show, in the movie, and that person is the main character that's telling the story. His name is Chuck Keig, or Keig, however you want to say his name. But, yeah, so when you're watching a film, just remember it's coming from his perspective. And but he gives everything sort of along the keel. You know, there's artistic license with it. But the people who were actually involved, like the captain, the skipper of the ship, his name is actually Chris, I believe it's Chris Sheldon. He actually, you know, he confirmed that things pretty much kind of were similar to that, except for, you know, a few things. But like he said, the very end, the tribunal, one of the things they said, that was not, it wasn't quite as dramatic as it was in the film, but there was sort of like a tribunal kind of thing. It's basically protocol when there's some kind of incident like that at sea. So anyways, I'm going to talk about a lot of factors in the film as they go along. I'm going to try to keep it as chronological as I can, but you know, some of the aspects that are psychological or ones that are taking place because of other psychological factors involved. So if you haven't seen the movie, I'm going to quickly describe it in real quick and dirty point of fashion. Basically, there was a gentleman who he and his wife started a school on a windjammer. They call it actually this the albatross. It's a Brinkman. I can't remember the exact definition at the moment, but the type of ship the albatross was is basically a windjammer type smaller ship. And there was, I can't remember the exact number of young men that were there. They're 17, ages from 15 to say 18 years old. They were there to learn Spanish in the real ship. They were there to learn Spanish and learn about nautical navigation. And they had also English and some, maybe one other subject. Excuse me?
I've got it.
Hello? Okay. I'm not sure what that noise is, but anyway. So anyway, they go out on the ship and all these boys, the real story, they said that there wasn't as many boys with problems that were on the boat. Most of them were regular kids. But in the movie, there are a few issues that are precipitated by the parenting styles of a couple of the children, the young men that are on the boat. For instance, the young man who's writing this story, his father is authoritative. authoritative type father. And the difference, and I'm going to tell you the differences between his father and another character in the film, and his name, the other character's name was Frank in the film. His father was an authoritarian type father. So what does this really mean, and, you know, who really cares? Well, it really does precipitate the type of behaviors that are going to result from the child. For instance, Chuck, his father, he had rules. They were sort of strict, but he actually was the type of parent in this parenting style will listen to their children, and they'll respond to their children, and they nurture their children. And their children tend to be really quite well-adjusted individuals. They tend to be happier. On the other side of the coin, well, Frank's father was an authoritarian-type parent. They are the kind of people who have very strict rules. There's only one way to do anything, and if you don't do things exactly the way they want, then it's you get immediate punishment, and usually it's harsh, and there's usually no rhyme or reason as to why they get so angry and bent out of shape if things are not exactly the way they want things to be. All throughout this movie that we saw, the character Frank, you can tell that he's completely manhandled by his father. And most people are hard-pressed to not want somehow for this kid to be anywhere away from his father. Just his father was basically a tyrant. And that type of parenting style either makes your children extremely withdrawn, shy, and depressed, or it makes them very angry and aggressive because they're constantly wanting to push back against the person that's a tyrant. So that was the movie beginning. They learn how they learn how to be on the ship. They learn how to do all the rigors of the ship. And they learn about sort of coming of age, of becoming men, more mature and their understanding. And this whole cruise is basically they're sailing for a year. They go out for a year and they're on this boat working with these other young men and going into different ports and learning more. And so while they're on this cruise, there's incidents that happen between the men, and I'm going to bring up some of those instances and talk about what's going on and just and, of course, you could join in if you've called in at that point and tell if you have any feelings about it or have any feelings about some of the things that I'm saying or have any suggestions or ideas. Please feel free to call in. The number is 646-727-2914. And you can also check in at the chat. Nina is there. There's usually a few other people in the chat room. If you don't feel like you would like to speak on air, or if you're more comfortable just chatting, pop in there, give your suggestions, bat them about if that's what you choose to do. And let's see. What else do we want to do? Okay. I'm going to go a little further into the movie. Like I said, the gentleman is married. He and his wife are doing this cruise thing. In real life, they were only married a couple of years. They had met on another ship, a windjammer-type ship that they both worked on. And I don't remember if it was actually a teaching school or not, but anyway, she's a doctor. And so she serves as the doctor and take care of any things that happen aboard. And let's see, who else? I think that's it. That's basically who's on the ship. They, in the movie, they actually meet some girls from Holland, and they go out for a day on the cruise, and then at night they come back into town, and the boys socialize with these girls who are about the same age. And then the cruise goes on. The boys have an outing where they bond, and they ascend a mountain where they, there's a special little cache where they keep a book, and the boys that come through on this cruise, they would sign this book, and they would put the put that little cache back so that the next cruise group that comes through would get to do the same thing. That's much later in the cruise, after they've come together more as a team. And let's see. And then there is tragedy. At some point towards the end, on their way back at the end of their year, they're sailing on their way back to return to their parents, and a white squall happens. What a white squall is, it's a natural type phenomenon, but it's out at sea. One of the things that they believe is it's more like, now for a white squall, it's more like a weird microburst type event. And basically there's thunder and lightning, there's extreme wind, and think like tornadoes, only you're out at sea, and it happens in a flash, and it ends in a flash. It's extremely unsuspected. So it's just like, boom, it hits you. And so when this white squall happened, some of the boys on the cruise actually got stranded underneath the under deck. And they couldn't get out, and the skipper's wife was also under deck, and he couldn't get her out. He kept trying to get her out. A couple of the other boys tried to get out another student, and they couldn't get him out either because there was something blocking the door. And then another one of the students got tangled in the rigging as the ship started to capsize. So it was a huge tragedy. And in real life, what the ship's captain, Captain Sheldon said, and some of the other survivors said, there was so much water pressure on the openings to get underneath the hole that they couldn't get the doors open. So they could see them inside. There was air inside for the people who were stuck inside, of course, until the ship sank. And then the ship's captain had to also deal with the fact that he had these other students' lives that he had to see to, and at some point he had to let his wife go. So it was a huge tragedy, and then there was the aftermath that happens when you survive something like that. Can't control, it's beyond your control, and yet you're forced to deal with the fact that you had to watch someone go away, and you knew they were going to die, and it's someone you cared about and you loved. And then you're judged about how you did everything. So anyway, it's called White Squall. Most of the movie is about the boys sort of coming of age, coming into their own, and then it basically ends. Okay, now I'm going to open it up to there's at least one person who's calling in. We'll see if that person's willing to talk or behave. We'll see. Let's see. Hello. did you want to talk or just listen? Excuse me?
Hello?
Did you want to talk or did you want to just listen?
I want to listen.
Okay, so shall I put you back on mute, sir?
You can.
Or I could just leave you there and you could jump in when you, it's pretty quiet there, right? So
you
can jump in if there's
some.
You like, thank you for calling. And anyone else, if you'd like to call in, the number is 646-727-2914. Okay. So as we started the movie, we talked about the different parenting styles. One of the things that you basically look at this movie as is these young men coming of age. And in the very beginning, there's a moment with one of the students that I found really hard to take. There was the main character who's doing the narrative of this film. Chuck actually had climbed up. And I don't think he was paying attention, but he had some of the rope that was actually around his neck as he was trying to get some of the rigging for the sails together. And he slipped off of the rungs and he was held around his neck, actually, and most of his, around his neck. He could have choked to death. He could have hung himself. And there was another student who was played by Ryan Felipe, and he basically was calling for someone to help him instead of jumping up and climbing up to help this guy. And the captain is yelling, get to him, and everyone else is watching horrified. And then the wife, her name was Alice. Alice runs across the ship and knocks the kid out of the way and is trying to climb up. The captain swings over, gets over, and grabs the kid and holds him up and gets the rope from around his neck. And so then we have this moment where the captain comes down and wants to know why he didn't climb up and help this kid who was choking. And he apologized. He said, and somebody said, oh, he's afraid of heights. So the captain forced him to climb. And he was getting upset and angry as he's climbing. The captain said he would climb with him. So the captain's in front of him, and he's on the other side of the rigging, and he's trying to climb up, and he's terrified. And he told the captain that he hated him, and he said, good, hate me some more. Hate me up another rung and just keep climbing. And as the boy starts climbing and screaming, then he starts crying, and he peed all over himself because he was so terrified. And so then the captain let him get back down. Everyone else was pretty much quiet. The guy who was hanging went to try to help him. The captain said, he doesn't need your help. You know, he's okay. And the other crew members, the adult crew members, were upset about that. His wife was upset. The cook who taught another subject, he was upset. And the only one who didn't really say anything about it was the one who taught English and basically was always there with the boys, helping them to do their stuff on deck. And one of the cook actually challenged the captain about it. And so it's very interesting. I don't know if you've seen the movie, and or even if you haven't seen the movie, I'm wondering how you would feel about somebody pushing you to the point where you would have to do something like that. And you need to also consider the fact, like the captain said, everybody has to pull their own weight, and everybody has to be dependable enough for that ship to work. If there's somebody who can't do something, then they're all basically compromised, is what the captain is trying to instill on these young men. But yet it was very hard to watch. I don't know if it's because I'm a woman and I have a thought process about wanting to nurture people. I don't know if I just think that people need a little bit more time to sort of move up with their fears. But I also believe that being pushed when you are fearful is probably better for you than most people realize. Because usually if we're just allowed to sort of languish in our fears, we usually don't change it because everyone says it's okay. So any thoughts for you, sir, about how you'd feel about someone being pushed that far, or do you think that would be a good thing or not a good thing?
I don't think it's a good thing.
And why do you think no?
No, I think it's particularly if someone's not ready, and I think there is such a thing as helping someone prepare to cross those kind of barriers rather than putting them in total shock by forcing them to do something in which you're absolutely terrified. Now, maybe the captain didn't think he had time to prepare him. I don't know. But everybody, when they enter a venture like that, brings their strength as well as their weaknesses with them. And
right.
You can't expect them to develop their weakness into a strength immediately. That, I think, is a ludicrous thought. So either you assist the person to overcome the fear and then help them through it step by step, and there are ways to do that, or the other way, to me, is just simply cruel. And I would take a look at the captain as having been cruel in that particular instance.
Well, you know, when I was looking at this story, and it's interesting, the main character said at one point that, and I can't remember exactly at the moment, the one part of the cruise, it might have been just after that, the captain, he basically had a more, I don't think he was harsh, but he was extremely firm about things and assertive. And he wasn't somebody who sat there and talked a lot. He was one of those men of few words, at least the way he was portrayed in the film. But I think what was happening is he was sort of setting the tone for the whole boat. It felt like to me, even though I sort of want to nurture anybody that's going to cry, and certainly somebody who's an adolescent or an adult who's so terrified they would actually, you know, urinate on themselves. I think that he was trying to set the tone of, We are only as strong as our weakest link, and we can't really have any weak links, or somebody could die. I mean, that one kid could have died if, you know, somebody hadn't immediately got to him to keep him from hanging.
But for him to think that they can't have any weak links is ludicrous. There are always weak links.
I think there are always weak links. Sorry.
Yeah, and he has his weak links too, whatever they were. They may not have been discovered in that context, but he had them. And I just disagree with the way he approached it. Whatever his motivation was, it was cruel. How he executed it was cruel. I don't care what his motivation was.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. So anyway, it's good to have everyone's opinion. I like I said, my first time seeing that, I was horrified, and I don't think most psychologists go for the hardcore, you know, push, but a lot of psychologists do push. I think I have a little toughness to me. Most people would say I do, but I don't think that I'm quite that. But I'm not a captain either. I'm not on a ship. So anyway, that was the first, what I felt like was sort of the first major step of trying to get these young men to grow up, to come into their own as men, transition from adult, you know, from adolescence to adulthood. One of the things that was asserted later after that whole incident, that character explained to the one who had been hanging, he explained that his brother and he used to climb to the top of a peach tree in their backyard because their parents argued and fought so badly that they were always hitting each other and breaking things, and it was really extremely loud. But when they climbed this peach tree, to the top of this peach tree and watched the sunsets, they couldn't really hear their parents, which terrified them. Which, parents, if you're out there and you're constantly fighting in front of your children, you need to understand that you cause a lot of damage. Well, what happened with this kid, he was away on a sleepover, and while he was away on a sleepover at some other, wherever he was, he wasn't at home that night. His parents were fighting particularly bad. His brother had climbed the tree by himself. And his brother had fallen out of the tree and had cracked his skull or something, and he died. And his parents didn't even find him until the next day, because they were so involved with their fighting. And they never understood why their son had gone up in that tree. And the other kid asked him why he didn't tell his parents why they went up in the tree. And he said he never really knew. He never really knew why he didn't tell them. So this is sort of the backstory why this kid was so terrified to climb. It was more than just a fear of heights, which he didn't initially have. It was the fear, a psychological fear associated with this horrific event in his life. So, you know, most of us are thinking, well, if the captain knew that, then the captain wouldn't have forced him to climb. But we find out later in the film at the tribunal when they're questioning him about trying to make this kid climb to the point where he urinated on himself, if he understood or even knew that this kid's backstory, and the captain said he knew. He knew the backstory. So it's interesting. I started to think about, I don't know if you're thinking about this, but I started to think about Mutiny on the Bounty, and I thought, how is this particular captain much different than Captain Bligh? But Captain Bligh was more like the authoritarian type parent that I described of one of the characters in the film. He was tyrannical, and he didn't have to be. Some of the reasons that Captain Bligh did things, there were a somewhat of a reason, but most of the time he was so tyrannical, there was no reason for it. And it, of course, caused tragic, you know, end results for that story, which was also a true story. But the difference is, I thought about these two captains, because the main character was saying that he didn't know whether to think of the captain as sort of good or bad, but he knew that he wanted to please him. And I thought about Captain Bligh, and I thought nobody wanted to please Captain Bligh on his ship, not even the people who were trying to stay in his good graces, because he was that much of a tyrant. And I think there's something to be said about people who are sort of rough, more stoic, and sort of firm, that seemingly harsh in their metering of training or something. But when you have the people underneath them actually wanting to please them, I believe that it's indicating that there's something good that they're getting from that type of training or that type of person. So, yeah, I mean, those of you who have seen the film, you may have some other thought processes about it. I'm not really sure. But to me, he was a strong captain, and I believe he was, I think he had, I don't know if he became more strict in his deliverance of how to be on the boat, how to be a good sailor. I don't know if that came from the previous groups that had run through his ship, because this was the third or fourth group of boys that he had actually had go through the training on his ship. So that's about three or four years since he started it. But most of them had, because there was a couple of boys who had actually been on the cruising school before, most of them seemed to have a pretty good attitude towards the captain. And in the end, all of the boys had a real affinity, and you could tell they had a real love for their captain. So let me dote back just a little bit. The real thing is about these men getting to their coming of age. We've just talked about the one where the boy, you know, with the, you know, peeing on himself. The other thing that happened pretty early on, they were at shore. They had gone to shore at some port, and the gentlemen were allowed to go off, the young men, and do whatever they wanted to do for the night. The captain explains to them that we're leaving at 7 o'clock in the morning. Make sure you're here sharp, because he said, I don't want to. He was talking about the reef. It had a shallow reef, and he didn't, you know, want any trouble with that. So he gave even a reason why they needed to be there on time. The boys were out doing all kinds of weird carousing, and then they come back to the port in the morning, and it was past 7, and the ship was gone. They could see it completely leaving the harbor, and they were all panicking, and actually, it was supposed to be 7 at night. And they were all panicking, and they flipped out because the ship had left them, and they got into a big fight. And the next morning, the captain came back and woke them up on the shore. They were all asleep. And he said, if this cruise isn't going to change any better, then I'm going to take you all back. I mean, I'm going to end this cruise right now, because you're not listening, you're basically not doing what you're told to do, and there has to be order on this ship for this ship to run. And I think that that put a little bit of a fear into these boys, like they don't want to get left somewhere at some port and don't know how to get home. So that was, and they were also, you could tell they really didn't want to just end the cruise. So they did go forward. That was another big learning lesson. I know of some people who have actually been on cruise ships, and where the cruise ship was there overnight, and the people, or at least till like 10 o'clock at night, and the people did not get back on their cruise ship. They did not get back to the port, get on their cruise ship, and by the time they came back, the ship was gone. And I just can't remember who it was who had this. There was somebody I knew, and I thought I would have been panicked out of my head. I wouldn't have even known what to do. I would have just been totally distraught. But they told me they had to actually catch a flight to the next port. More money on their own paying for the other one, just to catch their boat, because the boat cruise ship wasn't going to come back for you, and they aren't going to pay passage for you to get back to the ship. And once it's hit the main open sea, there's nobody bringing a boat out there. Maybe you could get somebody. But that's a pretty terrifying moment. I'm not sure if any of you have experienced anything like that. So, moving along, the next moment has to do with when they were all taking these young ladies into the cruise. Oh, he's gone. The next minute, the ladies taking they were having a night with these young ladies from these Dutch students, and it was a big to-do. Well, Frank, the one who had the authoritarian dad, who was really a tyrant, he shows up at the port with his wife, and they think it's just totally fabulous to show up because they want to relieve their poor little rich boy of being stuck on this horrendous cruise that they put him on. And the boy Frank is upset because he wants to be with the rest of his crew and to go out with the young girls and have a good time. Instead, he's stuck with his mom and dad having dinner with them in the way that the dad wants it to be. And when he asks his father why did he come and why does he always have to ruin everything, his father tells him to meet him outside. And the father, outside, the boy just starts walking away, and the father catches up to him. The mother comes running behind, and she's very passive. The father actually grabs his son by his neck and is choking him, almost chokes him into unconsciousness, and he's screaming at him, "Don't you ever talk to me like that." And just horrific, and the mother's yelling, "Let him go, let him go." She doesn't hit the dad. She doesn't do anything to sort of intervene except to sort of yell at the dad in her little passive voice. And when the son is sort of knocked down, he kind of gets away from the dad, the son just runs off, and the mom is just, she just asks him, "What is wrong with you?" Which is interesting because she's married to him. Like, somehow, she decided to marry this tyrant and have children. But I guess that happens in life. So here's this pent-up stuff already building from this boy who is just, he's been on edge since he first got there because his father embarrasses him as he's getting on to the cruise. He was late, as it was, something like a week late. And so now the kid's, sort of ostracized from the rest of the crew. He does start, once he starts fitting in, then dad appears and starts some more trouble. And so he's just an angry young man. And at one point, as they're off sailing, a bunch of dolphins actually come alongside, and the boys are able to sort of interact with the dolphins. The dolphins generally interact with man in a real positive manner, and they swim real close, and this kid, who is just so angry and probably wants to shoot and kill his own dad, he shoots a spear gun into the dolphin, which it just totally devastated me. Every time I see this movie, I just have to kind of walk out of the room because it's too traumatizing for me. But he had punctured the lung of the dolphin, and that meant the dolphin basically was going to die. So the captain very angrily gets a hold of it's kind of like a sledgehammer. There's another term for a nautical term, but I can't think of it at the moment. Huge hammer block thing, and he handed it to the boy who shot Frank, shot the spear, and he said, "You finish it. You know, you want to kill something." And of course, Frank doesn't want to do it. And then he says, "Kill it." And Frank's like, "It's just a fish." And it's not a fish. It's a mammal. And the captain has to actually put it out of its mercy, out of its misery. And it was horrific. And everyone else on board is just horrified. And then he tells Frank, "You're out of here." That's it. Like, no more chances. The other boys are trying to, they sort of feel bad about Frank going. They felt really bad about the dolphin. And just so you know, I found out that it was actually an animatronic dolphin, so it wasn't a real dolphin. Thank God. But still, it was horrifying to watch. But anyway, the captain is going to put Frank off at the next port. And the other students, especially the main character, is trying to plead his case that, you know, you want us to be here and to be a group and to be on a ship, to be a unit. You can't just, you know, let him go. He's a part of us. There is this saying that they all learned at the very beginning of the cruise where one goes, we all go. And Frank is even more sullen and upset, and yet he's got to go back to his dad. And the captain refuses to allow Frank to stay, but he did suggest to the student, you know, he asked the student, "Does Frank know how you guys feel about him?" And he said, "I don't know." And he said, "You might want to let him know." And basically, Frank wasn't going to stay. So as the captain is walking this Frank back on to shore to meet his father, who is waiting, the kid who had peed on himself because he was so terrified from climbing, he climbs almost to the crow's nest, and he's yelling with the bell that has "where one goes, we all go." He's ringing the bell, and he's yelling and screaming at Frank, you know, "Frank, you know, hey, buddy, da-da-da-da." And Frank, the one time you sort of see Frank smile, and he almost feels like, you know, he did belong there. And he did apologize to the captain. The captain shook his hand like you would a man. And then Frank has to go off to be with his creepy dad. So that's basically, you know, to me, another one of those moments where those boys are really, you know, they're, you know, showing how they are coming into their own. And we get basically towards the very end of the film, after the horrific sinking of the ship, you see after the sinking of the ship all the crew that survived, the survivors in the lifeboat, and the captain is, he's just crying. In real life, Captain Sheldon, he explained that once the boys had gotten all into the lifeboat and they were finally picked up by this Freighter, I think it was called, Rio Bravo. He said once he got onto the Rio Bravo, he said he just collapsed. It was just like everything was lost, and he said he didn't even remember what happened from that moment until they were back in port, the main port. He just, and they actually had to go to the sort of inquest. He said he just couldn't remember anything. And so at the movie sort of culminates towards the end at this tribunal where they're calling into question the skipper's ability or even his right to be a captain, they want to take away his status. They want to blame him for everything that happened. They feel that he didn't take all the correct steps. And so the students are trying to come up with ways to try to help save the captain because they feel bad about it. They also found out that Frank's family, his dad, was in town because Frank's dad, the tyrant, who's very wealthy, nobody's going to make his son leave a school as if he was less than. And he was really behind the big inquest about this captain's ability to do his job and trying to put the reason these people were dead all on him, the captain. So the main character visits Frank before the big tribunal and asks him to ask his dad to call it off, and Frank just says no. Frank, you can tell he's still bitter about a lot of things. But the main character gives him the bell that says, where one goes, we all go. And he just said, you know, do what you feel you have to do. And while they're in the tribunal and the one kid is trying, his name was actually Todd Johnson, who spoke quite a bit after when this he was one of the consultants on this movie. And this is sort of a bittersweet moment because they were all there in the courtroom and Todd Johnson, the character, was being questioned. He was being questioned about his possible part in the ship going down because the captain had told him to put the ship in, to turn the ship port, but he wanted to go starboard because he thought that the ship should go into the direction of the storm, and so he went against the captain's orders twice. And so this kid's sitting there in front, and he starts to cry, and he basically says that it was his fault because he didn't follow orders, and he said he didn't follow orders because he was He described himself as either weak or frightened, and his dad stood up in court and said, that's a lie, Todd. You know that's not true. Well, in reality, the guy who stood up, if you watch the film, who stood up and said that, he played basically Todd Johnson's dad. That was the real Todd Johnson in real life who was on the real cruise, so he had a part in the film. And the real Todd Johnson said that moment in the courtroom, even though it wasn't really that dramatic in real life, the film version was extremely cathartic for him, he said, because it helped to put a lot of closure on this extremely traumatic event that obviously changed all their lives. And so when that happens, the captain is basically, he stands up and he says, I'm not going to let you blame a 17-year-old for what happened. It was my ship, it was my crew, and I was responsible for all of it, which I have a lot of respect and a heart for anybody who's going to stand up for whatever it is that they've done, which whether it's had good results or negative results, you know, stand in whatever it is your actions are, and whether you apologize or you don't apologize, to me that takes integrity, and that is the epitome of integrity, which I believe he was trying to teach these boys from the very start of the cruise. And then real emotional moment where all the boys were basically saying, you know, don't walk out on us, because the captain was just going to leave. He left his, I guess he called it his ticket, basically what certifies him as a captain of his ship, whatever, he left it on the desk of the tribunal and was going to walk out. And the boys were like, you can't just leave us. It's because of this code, where you go, where one goes, we all go. And then he said, just let it go, son. You have all your lives ahead of you. Just let it go. And, you know, bad things happen, and, you know, I'm responsible. And he starts to walk out again. And then Frank, the kid who got kicked off the boat, he starts ringing the bell that has that same. And he just kept ringing it, and then the captain comes back, and he hugs Frank, and he hugs the main character who's telling the story. And then all the boys get up, and they all go into a big group embrace, and you can just see, you know, how proud he is of them, that they're, you know, who they are. And they explained that they didn't take the captain's credentials away from him, and in real life they did not as well. But the characters who were involved in this, the survivors of this, all of them, once that happened, they all went their all separate ways, and they didn't speak for like 31 years until they were making this film. And that's what sort of brought all of them back together again. Thank you, Pepper, for your comment. And the Todd Johnson, in real life, he said that that was probably the one thing that hurt him the most, is that they didn't all speak. And he sort of blamed the captain for that. Like, they should have, it's almost like no one else was there. No one else could vouch for what you've been through except each other. And since none of them stayed in touch because of the way it ended, they sort of were all suffering in silence by themselves. It was clearly a post-traumatic stress disordered type event, because especially for men with PTSD, most men experience PTSD more when they have to witness a death, or witness either they've had to kill someone or they've had to witness someone die that they know. Granted, PTSD isn't, you know, it happens in all, either gender. It's just the things that tend to shift men were exactly what happened in this film and in real life. So it was really sad when I read the whole story, the real story about how these people were completely, you know, not in touch with each other for 31 years, and then to come back. So the movie, while we watched it, it was entertaining. It actually served to provide closure for all of these guys who, you know, I'm so getting emotional. So anyway, that's basically the movie. That's basically White Squall. It's a great movie if you have a young person in your life, whether it's a young lady or a young man, in adolescent times. It's a good movie for them to see, to sort of see about the benefits of unity that comes when you meet different people that, you know, strangers you don't really know. That's what's good about going to camp. Summer camps and things like that is just the social skills and benefits sociologically and psychologically with getting to know and work with people you don't know, you may not necessarily think you would like. And I think that a school like this would be an awesome opportunity for any child to go away for a year on a sailing cruise, you know, that would be a working sailing cruise. I think that would be awesome. Of course, one of the things that came out in this film is, you know, there are risks to it, but maybe they're worth the benefits. And I think that, well, that is one of the things that the survivors all stated in real life, that it was an experience that they wouldn't trade for anything because of what they got out of it. So it's an older movie, but keep it in your library, and, you know, make sure that, you know, if you ever have a young person that's getting to that coming of age moment, you might want to show them this movie and talk about it with them and get their thoughts about it and, you know, help to guide them as they move towards some ritual or some situation to help them, you know, stand in their own adulthood, okay, or maturity. And my kids are signifying that it's a little too close to the end of the hour. So I'm going to go ahead and give you the rundown of what's coming up for the next week.
One minute, please, Brenda. One minute. I'm going to tell you, I know you all heard Brenda say, watch the movie, it's a good movie. I'm telling you to watch the movie. It's a terrific movie. Brings in all kinds of emotions, all kinds of thought-provoking scenes. It's a tremendous movie. I actually lent it to my girlfriend that was here for supper tonight, Boo, just so you know. I was telling her all about it, and she really wanted to watch it too.
Oh, I hope she enjoys it. Yeah,
I'm sure she will.
Well, thank you, Nina. Thanks for popping in to let us know that. Yeah, I mean, Nina would probably have popped in sooner, except she did have company. Well, she said
yes,
liver and onions, which I didn't get, but oh well. We won't
and
hold
bacon,
that against
don't
Nina.
Don't forget the bacon. Don't forget the bacon. There was bacon, too.
You're supposed to have bacon and onions with your liver and onions.
Yes,
yeah.
You did.
Oh, that's the only way to do it. I'm sorry, folks. That's it for me. You know, you might want to have some grits on the side. Make sure you have some good, you know, gravy from whatever came from it. Anyway, oh, I'm digressing. Liver and onions. My mind's going out the door. Sorry. And, okay, so thank you, Nina, for that. That was, yeah. It really is a wonderful film, and it's well made. It's actually by one of my favorite directors, Ridley Scott, who did all the Alien series. Well, not all of it, but he did the first Alien, and he did Prometheus, and he's going on that vein. But he's a wonderful actor, director. So
director, yeah. It was really a well-made film.
It was well-made. I extremely well-made. Except for the tragic parts of it, every time I see it, I'm thinking, I have to go on a Windjammer cruise. I have to. So,
yeah.
That's in my future. And, okay, so let's go ahead and do the rundowns.
All right, Friday. Friday is Traffic Jam with Lennis. And Lennis is on holiday, so she'll be doing an archive show. But tune in. I'm sure she's got some groovy tunes happening for that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the hip-hop show again.
my grandson enjoyed that
show.
One.
It was pretty good. I liked it. You know,
yeah,
it wasn't.
My grandson's enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was pretty good. So, and that'd be 30 minutes. That's at 5 p.m. on Friday. Last 30 minutes.
Yes. And
then Saturday?
Saturday is Time to Love with Lydia. And Lydia will be bringing her show live from San Francisco. She's going to be telling us all about her train trip to San Francisco. And what's happening in San Francisco right now. I'd love to be there now. I love that city.
I have to visit someday. And that show is going to be at 2
p.m. Pacific time.
This Pacific time, right. And then on Sunday, we have In the Studio with Lennis. That is also an archive show because it is Mother's Day, folks. And that is, she's doing a recast of the Easter show. So you're going to have Mahalia Jackson and, oh, my goodness.
Aretha Franklin.
Yeah, so Mahalia Jackson, Aretha Franklin, and it was wonderful, actually. If you're into gospel, it's a good one to listen to. So let's see. And that's 3 p.m. on Sunday.
Yeah.
And happy Mother's Day ahead of time, folks.
Happy Mother's Day to everyone listening right now. And that brings us to Monday, LNB, with myself, Brenda, and Lydia, Passage to Empowerment. And this week we are going to be discussing Habit or No Habit. It is the third part of our Body Life Appreciation series. And Brenda, continue from there.
And we're getting ready. We're actually going to be starting our challenge, 21-day challenge. And we're not telling you what your challenge is, but we're asking you to join us in challenge, and you pick whatever habit you want to relinquish or to bring in to your life, and then follow with us, and we'll all. And if you call in and you give us your challenge, and you know, we'll check in with you or, you know, talk about it with you each show at the beginning for the next 3 weeks. The beginning, we're going to talk about the challenge and then go on to our other rest of our show. So join the challenge, you know, call in, tell us what's going on, what you're doing, and we'll log it in and then talk about the great outcome in 3 weeks. And we'll all be celebrating our changes.
Yeah, that is at 8 o'clock Pacific time.
Right.
Tuesday, BYO Brilliance. Your discussion will be?
The brilliance of finding closure in life. And, we just had a good example of that, actually. And, just hopefully you can find closure before 31 years go by. But
no kidding.
About closure in all aspects of it. Is it valid? Is it necessary? And what it can or cannot do for your life. That's 6 p.m. Pacific time.
Exactly. And then Wednesday we have Psychic Readings with Lennis. And that is on at 5 p.m.
Yeah, it looks
Pacific
like
you're going to
change time. Time's there at 3. It's actually supposed to be 5 p.m.
It is 5 p.m. Pacific time, and Lennis is running a special this month. Every ninth caller will get a free hour reading with Lennis. So tune in, phone in, and get that free reading with Lennis.
Right.
That brings us back to Thursday and Filmcology. And which film is next Thursday, Brenda?
Next Thursday, the film is actually a documentary. It's called Uranium Drive-In. And this is basically, it's a controversial situation. It's a film about a proposed uranium mill in southwestern Colorado. It's the first one to be built in the U.S. in 30 years. And there's a huge emotional debate because the population that's desperate for jobs and the financial stability for that area that has been just devastated with Union Carbide leaving there and taking their plant elsewhere. And the other side of the coin is the radioactive material. So you have this community that's totally split on who, well, most of the community wants the mill, the uranium mill, and then there's a lot of conservationists who are thinking this is really a bad idea. And try to take a look at the trailer if you can. You can follow the link here, folks. It's one of those things that I wouldn't even know where to stand. It breaks my heart that people have no food or way to get food. They're so economically depressed. Where would you get the money to even move? And so you're there, and you're just so desperate that you're even willing to bring in something that might harm you and your children. There was one quote that just really disturbed me. This one particular person was talking about her family, and she said, "I lost a father and two brothers from lung cancer. They all worked in the mines. My dad, the uranium, whatever, my dad and my younger brother both died at the age of 48. But the way I feel, it was their time to go." That's the way the thinking is getting, because everyone is so desperate. And I just...
Kind of sad, isn't it?
Yeah, it'd be good. It's a good movie, I would think, to watch, because we all need to think about that in the world today. And so I'm really looking forward to watching that, and I hope you get a chance to watch it. You can call in with your thoughts on it. If you live anywhere near there and you happen to hear this, you know, please call in and tell us what your thoughts are. I would love to hear what your perspective is, because being outside of there, it's really hard for me to make any kind of, take any kind of side. But I'm just hoping the best for all of them. So anyway, that's back to, you know, here, 6 p.m. next week, Uranium Drive-In. And we'll see you next week, folks. Sorry,
all right, happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day. Thank you, Nina, for calling in. And thank you for not giving me any liver and onions and bacon. And it was nice that Sandy took the movie, and we'll possibly watch it.
Well, she's going
to
watch it.
You all take care. Whoever you are, if you're listening to this by archive or by radio, or however you're hearing it, thank you for listening in. I appreciate your support, and I hope you continue to join us on these journeys into the psychology of the films that are out there, because the psychology of films can help us in more ways than just make us laugh, cry, or hide under our blankets. All right? Take care, everybody.
Good night.
Bye.